Yeah, wait, are we actually doing this right now? Okay, so I ended up getting conned into doing a podcast because I knew you from Las Vegas.
Yes.
And then you text me and said, let's talk about some shit on camera.
Yep.
And then my media manager ended up putting together a podcast, and now I'm here.
And now you have a podcast.
And now Jimmy Talks is a podcast.
We love it. We love to see it. You're doing so well on social media, especially in that LinkedIn space.
How did this end up being you interviewing me? Oh, this is what the new podcasts are going to be, I believe.
I'm going to bring in interviewers
yeah. for me. I think
I think it is interesting, though, what you're doing. I think it's really great.
Well, before we do that, why don't we talk about who you are first and what you do and why you're here? Because I think that would be a good start.
Probably, yeah. So my name's Kelsey, as you know. We met in Vegas 2 years ago now, I would say. Operations manager for AbleTech Underground, specialist in utility protection and identification.
Very good. Give it a plug.
Give it a plug.
Yeah.
Back trucks,
where do you
utility
work?
Locators. Here we go. So we are specialists in utility identification and protection. So we specialize in vacuum excavation, certified utility locators, 3D GPR, CCTV of drainage, jetting, all that sort of side of things.
See, that's where you take the little clip and now you've just crystallized the company in three different sentences and put it out to the internet. And so what made you come down and talk to me? Because
I find what you're doing very interesting. I think you're creating a really great platform that doesn't really exist in sort of the Australian side of things. I think there's a little bit overseas to a certain capacity of people talking about their experiences in business. And I don't think that's here. And I think it's a really great opportunity for me to come on and tell you a bit about
I think that the challenge that we're running into at the moment is that there's so many experts in so many different fields, but not one person in construction actually wants to sit down, talk about the problems that they run into, talk about the challenges that there are, whether it's operationally, whether it's on site, whether it's behind the scenes, whether it's arguing with your wife, whether it's arguing with your friends, or whatever happens. And then, you know, we have to sit down and listen to finance gurus, fitness gurus, real estate gurus, who's going around putting out all of the shit that just is not applicable to us and applicable to our industries, and then experts that usually aren't experts are the only ones that talk, you know, and that they're the ones who are loudest and usually proudest, even though they shouldn't be. And so that's probably where I started off this year, because I had some shit to say. I was getting a lot of engagement on some platforms and thought that it might be a good idea, and it turns out that now I'm stuck with a podcast. So just a little plug that if anyone would like to come on and have a chat, we need fresh blood into it. So please send me a DM and you can come in and awkwardly talk in my office with – currently three cameras, but I'm sure that by the end of the year we'll probably
have
five.
100%.
Because we started off with one camera and now we're at three.
Yeah.
So
development.
It is getting there. What did you want to talk about? What's your number one thing that you think that you wanted to come down here and say?
I knew you were going to ask me that question.
Definitely going to be one.
I think there is a few.
Yeah.
Probably, I think there's no one in this industry, I guess, that is pushing the women in construction movement in the way that I feel it should be pushed.
Interesting.
It's being pushed, let me say that.
Definitely.
And I would like to say first and foremost, I'm a massive supporter of women in construction. There is absolutely no doubt about it. I love seeing more and more women out in the field, in the offices, day-to-day works. It's fantastic. I do feel as though the movement has been slightly disconfigured, and it's causing the divide and the segregation that we're trying to get away from. I'm finding that just from my experience, and this is just coming from my experience, I've never had a situation in my career, which is only short, I've only been in the industry for 6 years, but I've never had a situation that I've felt disadvantaged by being a woman. Maybe because of the position that I am in, that could be why I did start out in the field. And even then I didn't feel as though I had a disadvantage or anything by that means.
Yep.
I just feel as though we're creating a space for women where we can't seem to push out of being the diversity hire. So, you know...
Yep, I can see that.
Yeah, so for instance, I was talking with a colleague of mine who's an engineer, and she, when she started her career, she used to make the joke before anyone else could, oh, I'm just a diversity hire. And in fact, she is one of the best engineers I've ever worked alongside, yet she was the one getting in front of the joke. And I just feel as though there's got to be a space in this industry where equality is simply that. The best person for the job is hired, male or female.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that get the job, and they're the ones that do the job, and they're the ones that keep the job.
So anyone who knows my company knows that one of my top sales reps is a woman. My operations manager, general manager is a woman. Mm-hmm. They got the jobs because they're killers. That's as simple as it is. You know,
yep.
Like I've got two girls. I just want them to be looked at for what they can do, how they do it, and be able to, you know, get a position, win a job, perform the job as good as anyone else, and then get paid for it.
But they should get that job because they deserve it, not to tick a box on a tender. And I feel as though that is a massive... part of the segregation now is, you know...
You think it actually goes against what they're trying to do?
Yeah, I do. I do. Like, as I said at the very start, I'm a massive supporter of it. I've got a senior operator who's a female in a senior position now. She's an absolute killer, like your girls. Absolute killer. And she's got the job because she earned the job. Mm. You know, we've got our HR's female, our safety's female. It's not about... actively seeking females. It's actively being open-minded, seeking the right person for the job.
Well, that's probably where I started, because some of our jobs weren't as either prestigious or high-paying, or I don't know what it was, but I just needed to hire anyone.
Yeah.
And so it didn't actually matter who it was, you know, like whether it's a male or female, lots of experience, little experience, it didn't matter. I needed as many bums on seats in the positions that I could. I'm not putting a guy with no experience in the biggest machine that I've got, but at the end of the day, I had to have people. And so if a girl was applying, then she got the job.
Yeah.
And it just was that simple. Never really liked the ticking the box on the tender sort of thing, because I think that it ends up possibly sometimes going against having the best person in the job.
Sometimes it does, yeah.
And so how do you fix that?
I don't know.
Because maybe the only reason that we are here is because of the tenders that were put out at the beginning with those diversity, or however you want to, you know, frame it. Maybe the only reason we get to the position where we can say, oh, we want the best person for the best job, is because they've been around for however long. I'm not an expert in that field at all. But is it the chicken or the egg that we get the ability to sit there and say, oh, you know, we want the best hire? But really, the only way we got to this point is because of those policies.
Definitely, and I can completely agree with that. We wouldn't be at that point without that, which is sad. It is sad that we wouldn't be in this position without the movements and the opportunities that were created initially. But at the same time too, where becomes that line? Like, where do you draw the line on now we're pushing into more segregation? Like, we have to back off a little bit, I feel. We have to back off a little bit and allow it to naturally grow. It's always going to be a male-dominated industry, just as your beauty industry is always going to be a female-dominated industry.
I have seen a lot of things about that, you know. Like, at the end of the day, there are fields that males want to be in more and females want to be in other fields more. And I think that that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes construction gets a bit of a bad name because it is a fairly high-paying field as well in a lot of areas, especially in Australia with some of our mining and our civil infrastructure that we have going on here.
Mm.
So it's a bit challenging to put beauty next to mining, you know, because
it
of
is,
the
yeah.
pay. And then if you did have the unfair numbers, I can't believe that within 10 minutes of my first, let's call it podcast. We're now diving into a really touchy subject of women in construction and pushing diversity numbers.
But it shouldn't be touchy. That's the thing. It shouldn't be touchy. We shouldn't be having awkward conversations about it. It should be really straightforward.
I agree.
It should be black and white.
We have to get to a point where if we went back the other way, then we will be saying bring in more, numbers that must be reached.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that you're right, there's a middle ground that has to be touched on. Maybe there's an addendum on the bottom of a tender that says if you have a certain percentage, then good. Off you run.
And I think that's really important too. So I said it at the start, I am a massive supporter.
Of course.
It's not about reducing the support for women. It's about doing it in a way that doesn't cause the segregation. And I don't have the answer on how to do that. I simply don't have that answer. It's just about making people aware that we don't need to be pushing women to come into this industry to tick a box. We need to be employing the right person for the job.
If I said to some of my top performing women that they got the job before they're women, I think that they would be physically violent towards me.
And so
I think that they would genuinely, and they haven't got the job before being women. It doesn't matter at all. If woman not or a man, but at the end of the day, I think that most of the times in a lot of companies, what you're asking for is already existing.
Yeah,
you know, it must exist in your company, because I'm sure you wouldn't still have your job if you were shit at it.
No.
And so maybe that just needs to be more mainstream, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's about taking away that sort of, I guess, touchy subject sort of topic.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is touchy.
It's very touchy from this side of the desk.
100%.
This side of the desk, it's very, I'm not saying it's easier from that side of the desk, but I can talk about doing what I do and who I am and what I am, you know, and you can talk about that. But
I think that's exactly why it's good having conversations with people like yourself, because for me, it's not a touchy subject.
Mm.
I'm a woman. It's not touchy. I can talk about it all day long.
Yeah.
Someone like yourself.
You're a woman in construction.
I'm a woman in construction. Someone like yourself, you feel as though you have parameters in which you can sort of talk about it and that sort of side of things, which is understandable. But I just think we need to go back to basics and employ for the job. Take the name out of the job resume. Take it out.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, give
us
your experience.
If you get a team full of females, great. If you get a team full of males, great. If you get an even mixture, great. Like, employ the best person for the job.
I think that should be a snippet at the end of it. That one there, employ the best person for the job. Women in construction movement with a thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Okay, then what's your next one that you had on?
Oh, no, this is like rapid fire.
Yes, it is.
Oh, here we go. I'm going to get drilled here.
Real interesting that when we started speaking, because you were talking about getting some more engagement on your LinkedIn,
mm-hmm.
and how I get a little bit of engagement, and my first thing that I said, my first pointer was, do not use AI.
Yep.
Don't use it. Everyone can tell.
Yep.
The words become not genuine. They're not authentic anymore.
Yeah.
They've been glossed over with a politically correct brush, because of course if you think about how they built AI is never going to come out with anything controversial. It's never going to be any of the there's no racism, there's no political leanings left and right. Well, you hope so. But at the end of it, it's just tarred with this brush that says, okay, we're just going to smooth out everything and make it sound like
perfect.
A college professor that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And no one reads it. No one wants to engage with that. Like, I've had a lot of people say, yeah, grammar's incorrect on your posts. I think that they like it because I write how I speak.
Yeah.
And I don't always speak grammatically correct either. And there's some tasks. We had AI this week pick out the main points of a contract. We use that chat, GPT or whatever it is, for the contracts administration that we do here. So we pick them all apart and say, no, we don't want to give you a warranty for so long. No, we don't want to give you bank guarantees. No, all of your conditions suck and they're going to send me broke if the job goes to shit, which is normally how contracts read.
Yep.
So we pick out all of that. So we just got, we put it into chat, GTP, uploaded it, and it spat it out in like 3 seconds under the parameters that you put down. Now, that is a perfect use of AI.
Agreed.
A not perfect use of AI is trying to make yourself sound intelligent on the internet. Not perfect use is, writing your post and saying what you actually want to talk about.
Mm.
Imagine just our conversation, what it would have said about women in construction if you put in that.
Oh, it'd be so streamlined and perfect.
It would be absolutely perfect. And that's actually not what you want to say.
No, because I think there's, I mean, first and foremost, I am guilty of using AI. Early on, as I said, I'm still kind of new to industry, new to moving into that LinkedIn space as well. I think it's easy. It's really easy to use AI. There is a space in the world for AI, like you said, you know, writing contracts, that sort of side of things. In business, it should be utilized. But when it comes to personal social medias or platforms, I fell into the trap of using it because, as I said, easy, mm-hmm. makes you sound great. It gets, you know, you can manipulate it a little bit to get your point across. You called me out on it.
Yeah, a little bit. I call out everyone on anything.
No, that's okay. You call me out on it. But now I've stopped. I've completely stopped.
Have you got any more engagement, you think?
Yeah, my engagement's definitely up. But more so, I think my take on it is exactly what you said. You lose your authenticity. You lose your connection. You lose being able to get your point across. And I think whoever's using it, we've got a competitor that uses it, flat chat, like absolutely flat out, and it is so obvious and it's really disconnecting from what they're actually trying
absolutely
to say.
It is.
And you know, you've got people on there who may not be privy to the fact that it's AI who are just lapping it up, and it's quite frustrating.
I've actually found something really interesting. So I'm actually really technologically challenged.
Yeah,
I am not good at computers. I can't build spreadsheets. I'm not good at Excel.
Mm-hmm. No, neither.
When I was sending my own invoices, I sent them on an iPad on an app for invoicing that I downloaded. And that's
did it work?
It worked. But the main part of what ended up happening was, is because I'm not, like, I'm the guy who, when I click on the attachment, the phone catches on fire in my hand and I have no idea why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I click to print and then for some reason the drivers are never installed. I don't even know what a driver is. I don't know where to find the driver. Put the CD in. The CD's broken. I don't know. Get the, I don't know.
It doesn't
work. It's
just
not my thing.
Yeah.
So I drive the sea people.
Mm-hmm.
My whole business, drive the sea people.
What's that?
Go to talk to them. Sit down in their office.
Yeah.
What problem do you have? Where can we fix it? Where is the line of where we can meet in the middle, where I can win the job and make money and you're happy with what you need?
Mm-hmm.
You don't get that in an email. And so while my competitors are sending their emails because their drivers are installed for their printing and the attachments are loading on their phone, I've got problems on my phone. I cannot download attachments. And I walk into someone else in my office and I say, hey,
help.
Can you please
help
get
me.
This to open on my phone? And then they look at me like, you know, I'm an idiot. But there's something about that. There is something about going to see someone, sitting down in front of them, asking what their issue is, making a connection, and then after you've done all of that, you look at them and then say, so can I win the job? You've got all of their attention for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not like an email that they're scrolling through and they go, okay, better check on Facebook, check my email. Oh, he sent me a quote and some questions and stuff that I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
On to the next thing. I'm sitting in front of them. I'm going through all of their problems. And I think that the reliance that people have on technology these days, including AI, including all of the apps and the tracking and everything else that they're doing, you know, for on-site, off-site, materials, blah, blah, blah. Now, don't get me wrong, businesses would fail if they didn't use it. But we need to keep some of the fundamental parts of business that
be connected.
Being lost.
Mm.
And then, like you're saying about your competition uploading AI posts, who I'm certain they're going to watch this, and I am definitely certain.
Well, if
that they're
feeling
stop.
Offended, then maybe they should stop using AI.
They possibly will be offended, but I can guarantee they'll stop using AI as much.
Yeah.
Especially if you've called it out, noticed it, looked at it.
But I think it's not necessarily about stopping utilizing such a great platform.
No,
it's about utilizing it right. And I think that's where I blurred the lines at the beginning. I was just using it because I was like, this is great. I sound so intelligent. I sound polished. I sound exactly how I should sound as an operations manager, right? Completely disconnected with everyone.
Mm.
No one cared.
Yeah, but the people you're actually dealing with as the operations manager are liking how they deal with you. They're not talking to the AI version. They're talking to the actual real version of you. You know, I'm probably too far the other way, but I also understand that AI, its utilization, and how it can streamline a business is very important. Like we've got a platform that I've created that's working in the office that actually streamlines a lot of our invoicing processes, and streamlines our bookings processes, mm-hmm. and we're tacking things onto it all the time and trying to make it so that AI can do some of those processes for us.
Yeah, fantastic.
Brilliant. Am I going to remove the dispatch team from calling the truck drivers to say, hey, where are you?
Yeah, no.
No, I'm not. Because the truck drivers, if they're getting contacted by AI, which we could do, we've had conversations around how far we go with implementing it, and if someone puts through, so if it's not quite there yet, but so it'll be eventually someone who's ordered our trucks is going to be able to log into an app and click, where's my truck?
Yeah.
No phone call needed, because part of the slowdown of work is ringing up your sales rep and saying, hello, where's my truck? Mm-hmm. But you can't just say, oi, where's my truck? You actually have to say, hello, how are you? And they have to say, I'm good, how are you? And then you say, how are your kids? How's the weekend?
Yeah.
How's footy? And what connection actually turns from 30 seconds goes to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But is that the important 5 minutes?
Yeah, I think so.
I could get a click on an app that says, where's my truck? The AI contacts the truck driver or looks at the GPS location on the app, downloads it, sends it back.
But I think that 5 minutes of time is completely key to connect your entire company structure.
And it connects us to the clients.
Yeah, it's a good reason people want to work for you or work with you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that connect?
Well, I think that. Yeah, so there are tech companies and trucking companies out there with far more money, far more trucks than I've got. If I do that and it actually works, they're just going to come and do it better.
Yeah.
They'll just join the truck to the customer and take a clip on the way through, probably take a smaller clip because now they don't have an office at all.
Yeah,
No overheads. Invoice can be automatically generated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll get an automatic truck to drive around. I've seen videos of a truck with no driver in it
I've seen those.
Yeah, I know.
Scary.
Oh, I don't know how long it's going to take. I think that there's certain applications where it can really work. Like I think that some of your NDD work could definitely be automated.
To a certain degree.
Depending on how much information you have. So
exactly.
If you had, like say in a new subdivision that's had all of their services put on CAD, and mm-hmm. all of that sort of stuff, that they actually have to be where they are and where they say they
Correct.
Are and you're doing that, you could have that be NDD'd by your truck that you put in all of the fields around it with the that's telling where the pipes are in the ground and all of that shit. But I don't think that most of your work would be like that. I think that that would be very
small. It's
never
where
percentage.
It's meant to be, put it that way.
Really?
Even unless on the we've new located ones. It. Yeah, look, it's one of those things that I think as technology expands, we'll obviously try and keep up with it. But the main thing that we want to continue to do and provide to our clients is just being personalized.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. It's something that we've done since the commencement, and that's been our biggest sales point. And our clients today will still tell you the reason they like to use us is because they get to talk to the person who can answer the question.
Yeah. I still get that now. I still have a lot of people calling me. You've hung out with me all morning and you've seen my phone ring. And
exactly.
You know, if there's a fire or I'm running around to still put it out, my competition doesn't do that. My competition, you know, been around a lot longer. They have a lot better systems. They probably have a lot better management.
But you not say in better terms systems. Of
how, yeah.
It's not necessarily better.
Ah, so there now we're breaking it down. The better systems might be the thing that's letting me get the work.
Exactly. It is, and I guarantee you it would be. I know just in our experience, obviously we're not in this state. We do some work down here, but we're not in this state. But our client base up in Queensland is very dependent and it's very reactive what we do. So if I'm off and they have to call this person probably not even our company, but if someone has to call the office to get someone in that team to give them a call back to see if something can be done, you're going to lose the job.
Mm.
If they can pick up the phone and get the answer they want, that's what they want.
So part of the challenge that I've been through is that I agree. At some point of the business, you're big enough to supply what they need, but you're small enough to still be directly contactable.
Yes.
At all times.
Yes.
No matter what the day or the night or the weekend whatever. Public holidays, you're there. I went through that probably 8 to 10 years ago.
Okay.
And my life turned out to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Because we were running on an average day 15, 20 jobs, which means that there's 15, 20 people that want to speak to you today.
Yep.
There's 15, 20 people who want to speak to you for yesterday's work. There's 15 to 20 people who want to speak to you tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
There's all of this people on site who want to speak to you. There's the people in the office that want to speak to you. There's your friends and family who want to speak to you as well. And then your phone literally turns into something that just rings all day.
Correct.
All day. So I'd have some days that the call logs used to be on an iPhone 100 calls long, and I used to have some days it would only go back an hour.
Mm.
So I would have received more than a phone call a minute. And that sometimes started at 6 a.m. and wouldn't finish until 3, 4, 5 in the afternoons, because you're dealing with last week's problems, next week's jobs, and today's actual, I don't know, fires that are happening. And so how you try and get away from that, and how you move into a space where you can have a life, make money, your bucket be full, which is another thing altogether, how to actually be happy. But, you know, probably something takes 10 podcast episodes to figure out that. But how you move from being the direct point of contact to being the secondary point of contact, but them still knowing you're there, to being third or fourth point of contact, or what we've probably moved into in the last sort of 2, 3, 4 years. It's taken that long. So from 10 years ago, my life being shit and dealing with every problem, winning every job and dealing and trying to deliver every solution, to now we had a brilliant job run last month, about $500,000, and I didn't even know it existed.
Perfect. Perfect job.
Don't know the client. Don't know the people who went there.
But your people do.
But my people do. And so that process there to try and build that, I have no idea how it's actually done apart from employing the right person, because that person who was taking care of the jobs worked for me, I think it's 8 or 9 years now. And so he's found someone, he's their point of contact. They don't know Jimmy Starbuck. They know the company Starbuck, you know, and probably see my ugly face on the internet. But apart from that, they just know that they call the call my man, he gets it done, he sends him the trucks. I don't know the truck drivers no more, when I used to go to their weddings and their houses they used to come to mine. Now, is that a good thing? In some ways, really, no. Like, we had such a small, tight-knit, great crew. I knew all of my clients. I knew all of my suppliers. I knew everyone at work every day. I cared when, you know, they were sick. I'd check in on their wives if they had a baby. But now, you know, we run a much different operation. But it's still, we still try and be the same.
But I think what you've done there is you haven't lost your connection. You've employed people that have now built their own with the Starbuck name as well.
Yeah, correct.
We're obviously in different positions. I'm not a director, so I'm operations. So my phone, whilst I'm in this position, is never going to stop ringing.
Yeah, it's going to ring forever.
It's going to ring forever, and I like that.
How did you end up in operations?
Well, funny story. I was a hairdresser 6 years ago.
Yep. Is that why your hair looks good today?
Thank you.
Yep.
I was a hairdresser. Now, 95% of my clients don't know this, but the director is my husband of the company.
Of the hairdressing shop?
No, of Ableturk. Well, maybe. Of
is
Ableturk.
Is he a hairdresser too?
He is not.
Could he be?
No.
Okay, fantastic. I just needed to get that out of the way.
He's good at what he does. But he started this company 7 years ago now. He started with his first truck then. There was never the intention for myself to come into the company whatsoever. I got kind of thrown in randomly on a Thursday to get my truck license because he could claim it now and it would be a good thing to have.
See, that's clever.
Clever. So I got that and I continued hairdressing, and I think it was the following Tuesday.
Did you ever drive the truck to the salon?
No. That would have been epic, though.
Looking back, do you wish you had?
I did. I do. When I quit, I reckon that would have been sick.
Yeah, perfect.
But no. So the Tuesday following getting my truck license, we had one of our water cut operators call in sick. And he said, off you go.
You're in the water cut.
I was in the water cut. And let me tell you, that was honestly to this day the scariest day of my life. I had never stepped foot on a work site in my life. I was Googling the difference between dozers and excavators in the back corner. Like, I was genuinely really scared. But I was lucky enough to – the foreman of that site was fantastic. I was very open with him. I was green as hell. I didn't know a thing. They were doing road construction.
Oh, good.
So that was good. And I was the water supply for that.
Fantastic.
So that was good.
Yeah, great. That would have been a bad day for everyone, possibly.
I think, honestly, everyone had the worst day of their lives. I think I took out a couple of water pumps. I was...
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't the best.
We've all been there, though. Like, there has to be the first day on
exactly.
a construction site for everyone.
And it was
everyone
so
rocked
scary.
Up. I rocked it. I can't remember what my first day was because I started going with my dad and my grandpa real early.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember the first job that I won with my machine going there.
Scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real scary.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'd started my business, and so then I had to figure out invoicing. I can remember sending the invoice, the first one, where I sent it like a timesheet without any information on it.
Perfect.
Yep, no ABNs, no nothing, no company name, just please pay me $500.
Please.
And the person I sent it to actually rung up and said, you know, Jim, you need to add some things into it. Do you have an accountant? And I said, why would I need an accountant?
You just got to pay me $500.
Yeah, $500. My bank account details on the bottom. Or I'll come to your house, pick up cash, either or.
Perfect.
And so after a water cart?
I was there for 2 years and I was a really good water cart operator by the end of it. I loved it. I was traveling an hour either way each day, 2 years. That got a secondary gig and I started getting a bit of client like relationships whilst I was in the water cart. So my phone started ringing a little bit just for general admin stuff. So we decided to make the move that I would come across to administration. That was short lived. I am terrible at administration.
Are you?
I'm really bad.
Worse than the water cart?
At
the beginning. Like at the end, it sounds like you're a killer water cart operator.
I was a great water cart operator.
Yeah.
I was very bad at admin. I'm very reactive. I'm very high paced. So generalized administration didn't suit my brain whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
What we found I was really good at though was coordinating and when everything's on fire, being able to put it out.
Yep.
So we actually put on administration and stepped me up into operations. And from there, it's been great.
It's really interesting how it works with wives and girlfriends and everything else. Because so I was drowning at work in paperwork, mm-hmm. like absolutely drowning. You know, were invoices, timesheets, payroll.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a bookkeeper, so I was doing a little bit of the myob. Sort of inputting.
That'd be really hard.
Quoting. Organising
your
everything.
Maintenance on your equipment.
And so we were at, I was probably at 10 or 15 people before I had anyone help me in an office position or do any admin at all. And life really sucks and it's really challenging to tell people that your life sucks because from the outset you're killing it.
Yeah,
your
everyone thinks
abs,
it looks
like
great.
You are your business. You started off. You were buying it yourself. You were the shittest water cart operator on the planet. And then after 2 years, bang! You got 10 blokes underneath you, and it's working really well. Mm-hmm. And they don't actually know that your life is shit. You can't see your mates. You know, you're not there for your family. You know, like you're missing out on functions or shit and everything else. And you have this huge disconnect between actually what is happening. And what the perception is, and especially with social media, because you're expected to put out to the world what you're doing. If you're in business, everyone's seen online, put out to the world what you're doing, what you you know, tell everyone. So you're putting out the wins.
Yeah, the highlight reel.
Yeah, you're putting out the highlights. But in actual fact, 90% of it is you sitting at your kitchen bench going, oh, my God, I'm so tired. My missus hates me.
Yeah.
I missed out on my kid's violin concert, which I would have hated being there anyway, but I hated not being there more.
Yeah.
You know, I missed out on my brother's 30th birthday party. I can still remember that. That was 15 years ago, I think. Yeah. I missed out on that because I was doing a job.
Yeah.
And the choice is, you know, be the younger generation and tell the guy you're working for that you can't rock up because you're going to a party.
Yeah, nah, that's not going to fly.
That's not going to fly because then all of a sudden you won't get the next job.
No.
The only reason you get the jobs these days when you are the younger generation is to prove that you're everything that they you're not.
That you're not everything they think you are.
Got it. Perfect.
I still don't think that was right.
Yeah, no, I think it is. It's better than my one where I'm not what you think I am, but not.
I got it.
Yeah. That's the issue. That's what ends up happening. And so often the first person that you turn to is your partner.
Yeah.
You know, or your mate. Like, I've employed a lot of my best friends. I've employed a lot of my friends. I've employed, you know, my father-in-law from my previous marriage still mm-hmm. works for me. When I took you to the yard this morning, the person who was driving around in that rickety old forklift. Who is lovely. Is my ex-father-in-law who has worked for me for over a decade.
That's amazing.
Through a divorce, through everything, he's still working here. He has a lot of respect for me. I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah.
No matter what was happening. Of course, like if the divorce was, I don't know, like one of those movies where all of the shit is happening.
Probably
wouldn't have stayed here. It was much more amicable than that. But still works here, still helping out.
That's a testament to yourself and the company you built, though.
Yeah, and to him.
Definitely.
And to him. He rocked up, you know, every day to work, mm-hmm. even though he probably could have headbutted me at certain times. Having to spend all the money on a wedding that probably shouldn't have been spent. But, you know.
Anyway.
You get that in life.
You do.
You know, I don't mind talking about my life in general. I'm all good. It's
it's
just one of those things.
Yeah, and I think, like, it is definitely a testament to him, but I really think the core of that shows that you have a good work environment, and regardless of who you've chosen to put in these positions, they've maintained that and you've continued that. So you might not have the direct connect to your clients or to your people anymore and that sort of side of things, but you have – probably we're circling back on a topic we've already talked about, but you've certainly employed the right people.
Oh, definitely.
To continue that.
I've discussed a lot over the times that the solution to every problem is just people.
Yeah.
But the cause of every problem is also people. People are the absolute keystone to a company in every facet.
Yeah.
Who's in what position, what they're responsible for, and if they're the right person for the role, which sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, that is more than okay. In fact, it's to be expected. But a bad boss will let that bad situation keep happening, or that toxic situation where the employee isn't happy either.
Yeah.
Like no one's winning.
Mm.
In fact, everyone's losing.
Yeah.
But it's the leader's job, and that might not be me. That might be a different leader in the company. It's the leader's job to recognize that and try and figure out what it is, what that looks like and the outcome. Do you keep them on? Do you don't keep them on? Do you find a different spot for them?
It's very hard not to keep people on anymore.
Oh, that's a...
very hard.
I agree. That's probably both a good and bad thing, depending on what size your company is. Like when your company's really small and you got one dickhead working for you and there's only three of them, it's not really like you can move him sideways and say, you know, you can go to a different job. There's only one job.
Yep.
But when your company gets slightly larger, slightly bigger, there's always some room for some wiggle.
Yeah, and I agree with that too. Working with them, definitely. But the HR side of things, I think you've touched on it a little bit before, is getting really hard for businesses in that sort of mid-range.
Yeah, incredibly hard.
It is hard.
The mid-range businesses, the small to medium-sized businesses in Australia are definitely getting the squeeze.
Yeah.
We've had so much work around Australia that it's been actually quite easy to make a small to medium-sized business. The work's there.
Yeah.
Go get the finance, you know, work your ass off. You'll have probably – and if you're good at your job, you'll most likely have a fairly successful small business.
Correct.
We can be the tax cows for the government. You know, which we won't touch on too much just in case there's an ATO officer who watches this. Hello, mate. Please don't come to my office.
Hello.
None to Able Tech either. But then there's a, you know, like we get squeezed from the tax, we get squeezed from all of the compliance standpoint that we're doing. Gets increasingly more difficult to win projects. You know, in the 90s and in the 80s, you were able to go to the council and, you know, you could be a landscaper for the council really easy. Yeah. You know, like that process was far simpler. Now it's
difficult now.
The compliance is off the chain of what you have to do. I've got trucks with beepers, buzzers, squawkers, you know, the door opens and an alarm clock goes off and then, you know, the body goes up and it yells at you and then you put it in reverse and something squeaks. But I get why. I think that it is a good thing, but imagine trying to enter into that market.
That's what I mean. Like, it is a good thing. It's, you know, we are putting in the human resources side of things, we are taking care of people.
Yes.
We are being safe, but no one talks about how hard it is to maintain.
Or how hard it is on the business owner, because like we said before, business owners are killing it. Anyone in management is killing it when, you know, working more hours, putting in more effort overall. It doesn't necessarily mean the hours. The effort has to be super high. And there's a lot of risk. Yeah. There's a lot of risk. You know, I think it's something like, I want to say the mass of 3,000 construction companies have gone broke in the last 18 months or year or something like that. I'm sure someone will comment and tell me the exact number.
Yeah, that's definitely wrong.
You think?
I don't know.
Oh, good. it's a ridiculous number, though.
Yeah.
A ridiculous number. And there is never any. So I have had, just so, I don't know how many companies have gone broke, but I've never gotten a dollar back from what they've owed me.
Yeah.
Never. However, I have three or four times had to fight a clawback from the liquidator saying that I got paid my, even though I was owed it, they're saying that someone else was owed it before I was.
Yeah.
And so I'm not entitled to that money, even though I was owed that money. Like, it's not like they're paying me. Yeah, and I get why the laws are there. And it's the same thing with the compliance. We understand why the trucks go beep. We understand why the, you know, they squawk, squeak, and, you know, flashing lights go off when whatever's happening. We understand it all. But it does make it supremely challenging.
Exactly. And that's okay. Like, and that's what I feel as though this industry lacks, and why I think this is a really great thing what you're doing is owning a business. And I think, obviously, I don't own a business, so I don't want the lines to be blurred here. But owning and running a business is really hard, and there's not a lot of people out there that talk about the challenges of that and the back and forth on, you know, generalized day-to-days that are so challenging that you face and you accomplish and you get through isn't spoken about. No one's talking
I think that everyone, you either get the polished version from a CEO that's part of a company that has 1,000 people.
Written by AI.
Yeah, possibly written by AI. Or you have a bloke digging out a backyard who might not have seen some of the super big challenges that end up coming. And then last but not least, you have people that are too scared to talk about it because they're afraid of what their clients might see, their suppliers might see, or anything else like that. But at the end of the day, I'm just a real person. And
yeah.
So are you. And it's, we all have our problems and they're real challenges. And I decided to be all in on LinkedIn for 12 months, all in on Instagram for 12 months. I've always used it incredibly passively. I've built a big following just, you know, I think I put up 50,000 followers on Instagram this week.
Congratulations. That's epic.
Well, it took me 12 years of just posting shit on there. And the reason I started posting was when Instagram came out, I probably got one maybe 6 months after it came out or something. And, like, everyone's posting what they're doing.
What they're eating.
What they're eating. There were avocados posted every single Saturday morning. I was working.
Yeah.
I was digging holes. That's all I did. The sunsets or sunrises I used to take photos of with machines in the background, they were because I was on site from when the sun came up to when the sun went down.
Yeah.
You know, on a Saturday, I wanted to work on Saturdays because I had no money and I was pretty broke and I was hungry for the work. And so, of course, I'm going to put it up. And then I was probably, not the first, because lots of people did it, but I've definitely been one of the more consistent over the last decade of just continually posting nonstop online about what I'm doing, and now it's turned into what Starbucks doing. And you, 12 years ago, I was probably posting pictures and I had 5 employees. You know, now we can have 150, 200 people at work a day, and you can actually watch that journey if you've ever bored enough to scroll through.
I'm going to go do that.
Yeah, you'll have to be really bored, but you can start off at the very beginning and see those jobs that I'm doing. You can see me digging out a backyard, you know, for someone.
I think that's really cool, though, that you've got that, like, captured.
Yeah, and I was actually talking to a bloke the other day. I said, listen, if you're ever wondering if I can dig a hole, because we were going into some real specifics about a job and everything else, I said, and he was talking about following my socials and everything, and I said, just scroll through it. Like,
have a look.
I said, there's 3,000 photos there. There's 3,000 photos that you can scroll through. You will find one that is your exact job. Mm-hmm. Exact what you're doing. There isn't a hole I haven't dug. There's not dirt I haven't moved. I don't know if the dirt glows because it's so contaminated. I've dealt with that sort of stuff. I've dealt with all of the risks. If the dirt's topsoil and you want to get rid of it for as cheap as possible, I've dealt with that too.
Yeah.
Let's find the cheapest possible place to take it.
Yeah.
And everything from in between, from digging a long skinny hole to digging a giant Olympic swimming pool. Yeah, I've dug one of them too.
Have you?
Yeah, I've dug a 50-metre pool. I haven't dug the one for the Olympics though, but...
Maybe you will.
Brisbane. I'll dig the pool for free.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll come up and just dig the hole for free. Yep. And then I can when we look back on this podcast in 10 years, we can be like, yeah, so he hadn't dug the Olympic swimming pool yet.
Yes.
But here's the picture of it now.
Yeah.
So see, just let me put a digger there that says Starbucks. Oh, do you know what? Doesn't even have to be mine.
Just I'll put a
bring
sticker
stickers
on it.
That say Starbucks, and then we're good.
Yeah.
Because that's how we'll Instagram works, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's just the highlight reel, remember? Welcome back. Short break
because of a camera failure. Sucked in. Anyway, what would you like to talk about next?
No.
Because you're the person who leads this, not me, because I can't do this
forever.
This isn't
Kelsey's talks. So.
That's actually probably a good point. You mentioned before about working with your husband, but not your business.
Correct.
It's not your business.
No.
But it must at some point be a little part of your business too.
It's my whole life. So the way I like to differentiate it is when I'm at work, I'm the operations manager. When I'm at home, I'm a wife. So obviously, as you know, you take your work home to your wife. You probably talk about it a little bit in certain aspects. It's a full-time job doing what you do.
Yep.
For my husband, it is a full-time job. So I am there completely for him as a wife when I'm at home, but at work my role is to be the operations manager, and I do that entirely and wholeheartedly.
How do you go with separating that?
Well, so within his role, he's in a position now where he takes care of the generalized working on the company and estimating, that sort of side of things.
Yep.
I have nothing to do with that.
Yep.
I am simply operations. I obviously report to him when I'm at work. He knows what I'm doing. He knows where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I have expectations of my role, KPIs, that sort of side of things.
Mm-hmm. How does it go when it's a serious meeting? Then he's like, Kelsey, you are shit.
Well, we actually, yes, well, that does happen. no. So we actually just put on a COO. So this was a massive step for us, putting on someone that sits in between Geordie and myself. This COO specifically has got massive civil mining experience, and we are really excited to have him on board. We felt as though we were getting to a point in business where we needed somebody that could teach myself and everyone that sort of disperses out from me more than what I can teach them, because I am new to the industry and...
You're not that new. 6 years isn't that new.
I know, like, but 6 years is new to sit here and say, teach everyone everything I know.
That's true. I'll agree with that.
Yeah, if I was being like, everything I know, everyone would be like, shut up, you've been doing it for 6 years.
Yeah.
I need someone that I can learn from, that I can then feed through.
Yes.
And teach down. And it was really important.
Did they come from the same spot? Because this is where it gets really interesting as well. Because where do you hire from? Because... I have a big thing. A lot of my competitors' employees, LO employees, they come and contact me.
Yep.
And you have this challenge that say, do you want to be like competition? Do you want to be the exact same? Do you want to hire the same people? I haven't actually had very good luck with hiring them, if
I'm
honest.
That's interesting.
A lot of them, especially from the more established companies that I compete against, we need to chase our work.
Yeah.
Our work ain't given to us. Like, if you imagine, you know, you've got a Toyota dealership.
Mm-hmm.
People walk into Toyota to buy a car. Mm-hmm. They want a car. They want a Toyota. You've sold it.
Yeah.
It's easy. Now, if you're new into the market, you got to be starving.
Yeah.
You got to be that hungry for the sales. And a fair bit of my competition, they're not as hungry anymore for the sales because they don't have to be, for one.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that simple. You need a truck, you call them, and they send you a truck. It's,
yeah.
They're sitting talking about when they're going to deliver a job. Who do we need to get pricing from? Their name's first on the list, second on the list.
Yeah.
And we're struggling, not as much anymore, to even get onto the list at the beginning. Then when we get there, we sit down and they're flicking through and they say, oh, yes, you've got your paperwork. Yes, you're compliant. Yes, yes. Now, who are you?
Yeah.
And what do you do? How many trucks have you got? And back in the day, I used to say, two. And they go, you've got two trucks. And I go, yes. I do. Now I've got the subcontractor pool. I pull from the exact same group of subcontractors that they do.
Yeah.
So your trucks on site, whether they're working for them or working for me, they're going to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
However, what I can say with my whole heart is you call, I'm there. You need someone to offer something a little bit different, I've got it.
Yep.
There's a reason why we've gotten here. There's a reason why we do what we do and how we've managed to carve out the smallest slice of the industry. So give us a shot. And some people have, maybe because I'm a good salesman. I haven't screwed it up much. Sometimes a little bit, but, you know, I haven't screwed it up much. And we've gotten some amazing projects over the line with some incredibly big deadlines, with some incredibly challenging conditions as well, as I'm sure you have, like when they call up and they're like, we need you to do this, and you go, oh shit, like I don't think we have that available. Yes, we'll get it done. And then you go, why did I even say that? I should have said I don't think we're going to be able to get it done.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. So in our sort of scope of works, we don't have a lot of, and this will sort of link back to the idea of having a business plan. So in our scope of works, we don't have a lot of dry hire options available.
Mm.
With the utility locating, the vacuum excavation, the CCTV, drain cleaning, emergency works, it's very reactive style works. It's not planned out 3, 4, 5, 6 months in advance for a big scale project. It's, hey, we have to excavate this. There's, you know, a fibre optic line in the way. We need you to mobilise everything you've got now. So for us, it's really difficult. We can't go and dry hire 3 or 4 trucks.
Yep. Do you have a mate with a truck?
No mates with no trucks.
Yeah, see, that's a problem. You need more friends. That's where it comes down.
We need more friends. But we can't just go and get, you know, 4 or 5 vac trucks to scale up for a project and then off hire them. We don't have the time to look ahead 12 months in advance, because our build times for our machines are 8 to 12 months.
Yep.
We can't look 12 months in advance and go, we need 6 trucks because we are expanding, because our works are reactive. So we've got to now dip into capital, purchase equipment. You know, we get it. Say we get it in time for the scale-up project. We get the job done. Now we need to ensure that those trucks are working at that exact same capacity after that project.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very difficult idea to have a business plan in place, because
I think the business plans are shit, and they're mostly done by is people that have gone to learn how to do business who aren't actually doing business. And so one of the things they have there, I'm going to say university, but I don't want to rag on university. University has its spot. But they've got a university professor sitting up there and saying, right, when you run a business, make a 5-year plan.
Business plan.
That's what we're going
to
do.
Like, the bank wants to see your business plan.
Oh, I love the bank asking for the business plan. Like, what am I going to do? I'll dig a hole. Tick.
And heaps of them.
Yep. times 100. Underline.
Yeah.
Business plan. Okay. Make money.
And that's exactly right. Like, it doesn't exist. If opportunities come across the desk, you either take them or you don't. You don't know when they're coming across the desk.
No, you just say yes at all times.
Correct.
We say yes at all times, and then we really struggle to get it done, and we buy secondhand trucks off of Facebook Marketplace and then spend a whole shitload of money trying to fix them. And then if the world turns to shit, now we've got a yard full of trucks and diggers that we can't send to work. And then you start losing your hair. And then you don't sleep, and then you argue with your wife. Perfect.
Perfect scenario. But that's exactly what a business plan like kind of holds you to. Like, you can't dictate your entire business and where your business is going to go at a certain point, because I sure as hell tell you, 7 years ago when Geordie started this business, started Able Tech, no way in hell did we think we would be where we are, working with the tier one clients, sitting at the table with these, you know, senior engineers, project managers, business owners, sitting here with yourself. I didn't envision that.
Yeah, no, Jimmy Talks. I didn't envisage that last week before I ended up getting told that this was happening. I thought we were going to do YouTube Shorts.
But was podcast in your business plan?
No, I didn't even know what my business plan was. I started running trucks because the trucking companies wouldn't give me any trucks because they kept making me pay for it on a credit card.
Oh.
Because I couldn't get an account because I was 20 years old.
That'll do.
And so I'm like, hey, could you please send me 10 grand's worth of trucks tomorrow? And they'd be like, pay for it. And I go, okay. So then you're paying. And then I went, why am I paying this? And, you know, like paying full whack. And I got a mate at home with the truck.
Yeah.
Like, there was no business plan there. My mate had a truck. And then I ended up getting one full-time truck that just drove around. And then when he had no work, I'd call the same mate and say, oi, can you take the truck because I've got no work for him tomorrow? I won't make any money, but I want to keep him on because I need him next week. And then all of a sudden we run however many trucks per day and, you know, got an office full of people, you know, like this nonstop. And I just don't think that sometimes a really good example is the amount of infrastructure work that's gone on in Melbourne in the last sort of 5 to 10 years, and the ramp up that has seen across the industry and the amount of people that have entered it. I entered probably just before it or around when it started, but my company wouldn't be where it is today without it.
Yep.
How do you, your business plan is I know a guy who needs a digger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can drive one, and I think the bank will give me the money for it because I can take out a loan.
Yep.
And money's pretty cheap. Now it's slightly different in the market. We had COVID, we had after COVID, we had all of these things that have happened. But now it's sort of seeing that I've seen a lot of companies move. You were saying this morning a lot of people have moved from Melbourne to Queensland because of the amount of work that's going on up there. And have you seen any challenges or difficulties with that?
Yes and no. I think whether it's in relation to people moving in the area is causing those challenges, I'm not sure. I think the industry is in a little bit of a lull at the moment.
Yeah.
So people are coming in, but we're still sitting in this lull.
Well, you also had a cyclone, which probably doesn't help.
Which was so painful, I might add. And it wasn't. We're not going into the cyclone.
We're not going into the cyclone. You've had lots of rain.
We've had heaps of rain. And there's just this a little bit of a lull in the industry, which is causing a little bit of quietness in certain areas, but also like a total ramp up in other services. So I think I find that really difficult to manage and maintain and stay consistent with business. And it just shows that business plan doesn't correlate with operational.
So what do you do? You need a business plan for, you know, like we had to put something forward for the bank, and you sit
and
they say, okay, what projects you got running? Okay, these are the projects. I've won them. They're all good.
Yeah.
We're good to rock and roll.
Yeah.
6 months later, they come back to you and go, oi, Jimbo, you wrote us a list and the list is full of shit. You know, there's nothing on the list that you've done. And you go, hang on, this guy can't get funding from your exact bank. And it, like, one hand isn't talking to the other hand. Like, if he got funding, he'd be able to build it. He'd hopefully be able to sell it. That's his business. Yeah. I'm just a guy who digs holes. Where do you go to talk to a guy about, hang on a second, like, we've won the job.
Mm.
We've won it. Like, it's ours. But it might not start for 6 months.
Mm.
and your business plan, what page is it on? When do you flick through it and say, oh, page number 7 says that when you win a job but it doesn't start, but you need to have the equipment available, but you haven't purchased the equipment, but mm-hmm. you need to find other work for it, but make sure you're available for the job that you win.
Exactly.
I don't know where that sits on page 7.
It doesn't. And that's the thing that's so frustrating. Like you'll hear people be like, your business plan, stick to your business plan. You can't. You've just got to ride the wave. You've got to say yes, like you said. Say yes, make it happen, work hard, your business plan. You might always have a business plan, but I guarantee you it's going to always change.
Yeah, it's got to be
the
fluid.
The goalposts change consistently and you either keep up with it or your competitor will.
I think that part of the challenge is the world of the exact same social media that we're on right now. Putting out all of these businesses that can run to a business plan. And,
which is great for them.
But it's usually in different industries.
Yes.
A vitamin company that gets investors, gets $30 million, goes, makes a new vitamin, markets the shit out of it, sends it to every Instagram influencer, and then now all of a sudden they're a huge vitamin company.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
you've done it. Great. If anyone wants to give me $30 million don't have to worry about money, I'm pretty sure I could stick to a business plan
too.
Yeah,
I could stick to one.
But right now my business plan is make money, dig holes, truck dirt. That's it.
Yep.
You know,
and that's maybe a great business
and
plan.
Not always in that order. No. Sometimes I have to truck dirt and make no money, but other times I make truck dirt and make a heap of money. I don't know where that fits either. That's probably page 2.
Yeah, I just think it's okay to know that the goalposts change and you just have to be fluid and roll with it, roll with the punches.
And the difficulty is I get so many questions, which is probably why I ended up starting to agree to this podcast thing is because I get so many people reaching out. Sometimes I'd have 10 or 20 or 30 a day reaching out asking me questions.
Yeah.
You know, I'm putting out the talk on finance, I get 20 people message me about their specific finance situation. Where do you go to find that out? Where do you go to find out what you have to do in terms of HR or in terms of contracts? You know, I've got a guy I've been speaking to on the internet. He's screwed with a contract.
Yeah.
Absolutely hammered. He's asking me what he does. We've spoken on the phone a little bit. Now, I'm not a contracts guru. I don't know. But just think about the how much the market is after anyone to say, right, I've been there, I've done that, I've looked at that. Now, I don't have all of the answers, but I do have some experience in that. And I'm sorry, mate, but I think you're absolutely screwed with your contract. And what you need to do is you need to go and talk to someone properly and not a guy on the internet or your finance. You know, hey Jimmy, I have to sign up my house on this, and I go, oh, try not to sign up your house, buddy.
Try every other option first.
That should be the last one. And he goes, oh, I thought it was going to be really good to just pull the money out, and you go, no, don't do that. And I think that's part of the challenge that no one wants to talk about their failures in business.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to see a highlight reel. No one wants to bring up the challenging conversations with, you know, like they'll say, no, the women in construction are off limits. We can't talk about that here.
Yes, we can.
Well, yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Can't talk about losing money because then that makes us sound like we got a bad company.
Exactly.
No, it doesn't. Every company has lost money. If you are in a management position or own a company, you are lying to yourself if you think that you haven't lost money on a job.
Not everything is successful. And that is simple as that.
It's not all rainbows and unicorns.
Correct.
That's a catchphrase if I've ever heard one, guys. Not all rainbows and unicorns.
That can be the title of maybe you could do a book.
Yeah. If one person asks me to do a book here and then actually sits down and
speaks to me. Well, you said you wouldn't do a podcast. So.
I did say I wouldn't do a podcast. So then I think that's what we actually need. We need take the posts and what we were talking about, the authenticity, you know, being genuine, and then just put that into the conversations that are being had.
Yes.
What we're talking about, how we're talking about it, and the problems with it.
Yeah.
You know, I get a lot of responses about Gen Z, millennials. I get a lot of responses about my Chinese equipment.
Yeah.
You know, you even responded and said, I don't think it works for us. We need better made equipment here, or we can't guarantee the quality or whatever. And just the conversation has to go forwards and backwards.
And I think that's what's missing. And that's what I was saying early on. I think that's what's missing until now. Like, I really think that you're doing something where people have the opportunity to give their genuine opinion in a safe space, that it's not judged, it's not concerning.
No, I'm
it's,
judging you hard.
I probably are. But I think it's a really good point to start opening up conversations that aren't as scary anymore, and we can go back and forth and help people in the industry.
We just need one person to say that they want to be on next, because I'm not going to go out and start talking to people. I might have to sick my media guys onto people, but
yeah, exactly.
But I think that people reaching out, having a chat, you know,
yes.
the last and probably most terrible thing about it is that consistency wins above everything else. And so
agreed.
Part of my challenge here is that if you don't do 100 podcast episodes, you shouldn't have done a podcast. The people who stop doing the stuff are fools.
Yeah.
It only works if you're consistent, if you continue to do it. So my goal is going to be sort of over 50 podcast episodes, unfortunately.
You've got this.
I don't.
You do.
I'm going to run out of shit to talk about, no
doubt. You won't, though, because, like, I mean, I could sit here and talk to you for hours.
No, please don't.
Whoa. We could sit here and talk for hours on different topics and problems, and, you know, certain problems lead into other issues. It's just a matter of having those conversations and getting it out there, and you will find plenty of people to sit here and talk to you about it, because everyone's got a problem, even though they don't post it online. Everyone's got problems. We only see the highlight reels.
I might not want to talk about it, though. No, but I think that Australia doesn't have enough of this shit at all. Like, Australia does not have enough. We
correct.
Lag so far behind, you know, even with the expos and all of that stuff that are overseas. You go there and they are massive, and they're doing TED Talks and all of the stuff. Like, they've paid me to do it in America.
Which was epic.
Thanks. But they've paid me to do it in America, but yet no one's paid me in Australia.
Rude.
Well, but they don't even reach out to anyone.
No.
Or the people that they're getting are the same people constantly who put themselves out there as experts about the same thing. But really, at the end of the day, some aren't experts.
No.
You know? At all. And in fact, shouldn't be listened to and given terrible advice.
Yeah,
terrible advice. I have a long standing issue with financial planners.
Oh.
Yep. I've got
need one of those for my personal life.
Do you?
Yeah.
What sort of financial planner do you want?
No.
No, I'm asking the question because we'll roll through it. How much do you want them to have in their retirement fund? How much do you want them to have in equity, in capital?
Mm-hmm.
And how many investments do you want them to have?
See, this is why I'm in operations and not finance.
Yeah,
no
but
idea.
If you think about it, do you want them to be on 80 or 100 grand a year and have no investments and still live at home with their mum and drive a Toyota Camry?
No.
Would that be a financial planner that you want?
No.
No? Why?
Because you've put me on the spot. I don't do finances.
I'll tell you why. Because you want a successful financial planner.
Correct. That's what I want.
You want someone who is rich.
Yes.
I want a financial planner that drives a Ferrari.
Yeah. You know? It's like getting a personal trainer that's, you know, not necessarily.
Yeah, you're allowed to call them fat. We're talking about bad issues. We're talking about the bad stuff. You do not want a personal trainer that's fat and unhealthy. You don't want someone teaching you about health who is obviously unhealthy. And you want a rich financial planner.
Correct.
Now, if you're in financial planning and you're not rich, it might not be that good of a position for you.
Correct.
Right?
Agreed.
And I have a lot of – so not talking like an idiot here, but, you know, I've obviously got stuff.
Got things,
and I pay a lot of bills.
Yes.
And hopefully after I pay the bills, I have a percentage of the bill paying amount left over for me.
That'd be great.
Yeah. No Bugattis or whatever here, but a little bit of percentage left over. Now, if my percentage is so much more than the financial planner, I should probably be telling them about financial planning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need a one who's got more than me to learn from, to listen to and be part of. And I'm not saying that everyone who doesn't have a house in Toorak who's in financial planning is shit.
Yeah.
But I am saying that, you know, we're going to get back on a topic, but at some point, you know, we need to make sure that the experts that we're listening to are actually experts.
Yeah, I agree.
you know, and not just people who are doing it for a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to set up, you know, your grandma's superannuation so that she has enough money to buy milk and bread. You know, like we want, like at our age, we want to be able to have a successful retirement, and you want to talk to someone who's going to be able to make that happen.
Correct.
Legally and within the rules of everything with your taxation, because hello, Mr. ATO, you know, we don't want him coming.
But I'm actually, yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah. And I think that you're not even allowed to say, like I said, I don't want a fat personal trainer. And you go, ooh.
Well, it's just not the word I would have used.
What do you, or what? Do you,
I was going the unhealthy route.
You were going unhealthy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, fat can be unhealthy. Like, I'm not the skinniest person ever, but I do try to be healthy. But I think that, you know, the same thing, you want the always want to employ experience. You can train some people up. It doesn't mean that they're, you know, any less than, but you wouldn't put a labourer in charge of a company just because of the fact that we're, you know, I get it a lot at the banks. The banks try and push financial planning onto me constantly.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, see, I'm lucky enough that I don't have to do too much of the financial side of things in the company. Finance. I just get to do the putting out fires.
Why don't you do the finance?
With my personality and my nature, I don't have a very good ability to work well in that administration and accounting sort of side of things. I think it's the structure of it that really fails, well, that I really fail at. I work best under pressure, high-paced.
What about if someone yelled at you while doing the numbers, like put a spreadsheet in front of you and started you'd do good then.
No, I work really well under pressure in reactive situations. I'm a people person. I am a very
problem solver.
Yeah, that's where I do my best work. I like leading people. I enjoy working alongside different types of people, and that's where I am best, and that's where I'm best suited. We tried to put me in different avenues, and it just didn't work.
So numbers don't fill your bucket.
Nope.
What's really interesting is I really like maths.
Interesting.
Mm, yeah, and I think that at some point, successful businessmen or women, whatever, as I said, I don't really care, they have to be good at maths or at least have an understanding of it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand your numbers in your business if you're not looking at your invoices, if you're not looking at your payments and understand what they are, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and agreed. You shouldn't be in business. And I don't think enough people talk about the fact that they shouldn't be in business, just like the fat person shouldn't be in, you know, personal training or unhealthy, or the person driving a Camry, unless they've got a plan of why they're driving a Camry.
Exactly.
Which if that's the financial planning, the planning part of that, perfect. I'm all good with that.
Yeah.
However, in business, one of the things I did every single day when I got home was that I filled out my invoicing and sent them if the job was done.
Yep.
Every day.
Yep.
I had a very good friend of mine. I don't know if he'll be listening, but he hated invoicing.
Yeah, okay.
I hated invoicing because it was the paperwork. He was one of the best excavator operators I ever met.
Mm-hmm.
His business has suffered over the years, and I'm all right to say that, and he'd be, you know, like I call a spade, his business has suffered over the years with, you know, a lot of people not paying or, you know, arguments or all of this stuff. And I have an opinion that it comes from not invoicing.
Yeah.
You send an invoice a month late, they look at it and go, didn't do that much work.
Yeah.
No, I'm not paying that. It falls outside the payment claim. But you need the money then, because that's when you do, when most or some or whatever it is, remember to invoice.
They go, correct.
Shit, I'm broke.
I need the money.
I need the money. Send I'm going to invoice.
Yeah.
And then they send it. And then they're like,
shit.
He hasn't paid me for a week, this asshole. They're on the phone. You got to pay me, pay me, pay me. At the end of the day, he's only had the invoice a week.
Yeah.
He could have had it 30 days ago. You most likely would have gotten your money.
Yes.
But it changes that dynamic there, and you have to be comfortable with those numbers, those invoicing, sending them. And I don't know why I did it. I think it was because I wasn't very good at the technology, so I never actually wrote anything down. I just remembered it all in my head, and then when I got home, I had to get it out of my head, so I put it onto an invoice.
Yeah.
Again, where hating technology might have helped. But because of that, I then followed that through. Never really ran into that many cash flow issues, never really, which touch wood because that's a shit place to be, but never really ran into that because I always had some sort of money coming in
consistently
because they got sent. Now, we still send every single invoice every single month with every single docket attached.
Perfect.
If you followed me on social media for a long time, I used to vacuum at the end of the month. The office girls would stay sometimes all night. I'd have a full office crunching data, sending invoices at the end of the month.
Yeah.
There were so many times we stayed till after midnight to send out a, you know, the last week's worth of invoice in because we actually send every single invoice with every day docket attached.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, I just got into so many arguments where they're like, I don't have that docket.
So you just
docket.
Like attach it.
Yeah, I don't have that
solve
docket.
That problem.
I've lost that docket. That docket doesn't exist. You know, like we're removing it. The docket wasn't signed. I've gone through all of it. And so now every invoice has every single docket.
Perfect.
It's annoying because the dockets are up to, I think, number 400,000 or something.
Wow.
Trucking day dockets, yep.
That's amazing.
Somewhere around there. And then on top of this, so we actually, here, business plan. What page are you up to? We ran into a problem with space on a server because we had something like 4 or 5 million pieces of information saved from trucking.
Yeah.
Because every truck that tips off, they get a tip slip.
Yeah.
So we have to save them.
Mm-hmm.
Truck tips off five times. We have five for the day. Plus his day docket, plus his fatigue docket. So now we might have 6 per truck per day. Then we've got the all of the other shit around crush rock products and all of that sort of stuff that we're saving with it because we also send through all of that information. So we ended up having a few million bits of information and then my system crashed one day because we had too much information. Now, I dig holes. I know problems with gearboxes on a truck. Where the hell do you go to learn about a server and how much information or gigabytes it has and what you've got to do with it? And I'm already technologically fucked.
Impaired. Impaired,
I am already. I wasn't going to say fucked, but now I am. So I was in deep shit. And then you're on the phone to all of these people, because the people fix the problem.
People
like,
fix the problem.
What do I need? And they say, you need a bigger cloud.
What? Sorry?
Well, they need more space in the cloud because obviously the clouds are
messy. And now we're back after a short break.
I think you should run the podcast, not me.
Perfect. So thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate your time.
I look forward to you moving to Melbourne and that you can run this. We can swap sides of the chair.
Yeah.
I'll be operations manager of Abletech.
You reckon? I actually reckon you'd do a really good job.
I'm a good operations manager.
Are
I've
you?
Been an op- yeah, I've been one. Yeah. I've done every role on the way through.
Exactly. You have to be.
Not so good with the compliance paperwork side of it, though, but I can remember where about 50 things are a day, who's driving them, and their telephone numbers
that
off by heart. Yeah.
That is me.
Yeah. So, and then know who they're working for and everything else and what their job is to do.
Yep.
Yep. So, yeah, I've got it covered. But was there anything else you wanted to say before we left?
No.
No? Okay. Well,
I would like to say thank you for having me.
Well, I didn't know that this was going to be what it is.
So thank you
for starting and thank you for being the first down here.
Of course.
And if anyone else wants to come and have a chat on camera under lights and everything else, please hit me up.
And I would like to let everyone know it is a full-blown setup in here. It's epic.
We don't do things by halves here at Starbucks. We only go full in, all in.
Yeah, it looks awesome. So I encourage anyone who has something to say to come on down.
Done. Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.